I know, or the thing that I feel is the most important thing, is our relationship with ourself. What is our relationship with, that means our humanity and understanding the part that's divine, and we have some of both. We need to take a good look at that, and we need to allow that for really all of mankind, though I'm pretty convinced most of mankind is not aware of his divinity. He would classify that as his goodness, I think, which makes it a little arrogant, you know, instead of recognizing with a humility that it's a spiritual gift that he got here with. It's not something that he cultivates out of an intelligence. He might like to think that, and then that would, of course, label it arrogance again, if that's true. So, to me, right now, what the Father's doing is desiring mankind to build a relationship with himself, both the human and the divine, and understanding the difference, what the difference is. Sometimes I just know that it's a spiritual thing in me, and then I know when it's not, too. And you tend to want to give yourself whipping when it's not, but everything in us is not divine. Some of it's human because it needs to be on a human scale. And so understanding that we're crucified on a cross of time and space daily, it's a constant thing. It's living a life. It's not something we do here on Sunday morning, or we set aside for certain times, but it lives in us, it breathes in us, it walks in us, it's has to be an eternal goal. Else, we're not what we say we are. We have to be aware that we are always His. Belonging. Father, what would you have? Always constantly say, instead of doing it just however comes to mind or what the normal intellect will tell us to do. There's usually always a better way to do most things. And I think that's about all I'm going to share this morning. I just wanted to kind of put us on that vein. I get the feeling that sometimes the stake is not drawn that deep into the ground, and we need to keep pounding that home, that what we're here for is to build a relationship with ourselves. Each other, of course, as we're thrown together, and how we manifest and treat each other, and it's an on-working, constant thing. To me, it's worth it. It's a growing. I don't think that it quits growing when we go by way of the grave. I think it's always a growing issue in all of our lives. It should be, and it should affect those around us. I was kind of blessed by Miranda this morning. She's not staying at home right now. She's staying with her Aunt Bertie. But she wanted to come by and visit this morning, which told me she wanted to be next to family. And she made an effort to see everybody in the house and come and see Karen, which I felt like was good. You know, it's a growth on her part. I mean, after all, she's just a kid. She's not even 18 yet. So what's happening to her is she's missing her family. And I don't know if she's going to say this, but I said to her, don't you want to come home and make everything right? And she said, oh, no, I don't want to do that.
Not yet. And she's not ready yet.
Yeah. So it means for me to leave alone.
Yeah.
You know, she's being a 17-year-old kid. And she's trying to find her way. We need to remember her.
Well, this morning, just to go along with what you were saying, I was studying boys. I keep hearing that song, "The Voice of My Beloved, Lo He Comes." And I started looking at voice. And the last thing of all the definitions in all the dictionaries that I looked in, it said, you know, like that we still small voice. So that voice is what we have to continue to listen for, because we are not all that we need to be yet. We need to have direction, and I thank God for that, because the voice is all kinds of different expressions. It's expression of song, expression of love, expression of intellect, expression of divinity. It's many things. But when I got to that last little passage, it was like, okay, Lord, thank you for that. You know, that a place to go to hear that right voice. There's a right voice, and then there's our own voice, and then there's a voice from the ages that tells us things. We have to discern those things, if they're good for us or not good for us. So, you know, there's many voices, and yet... His voice says to me, you know, I'm the only way, I'm the only door, I'm the only place you can go. I can look to my humanity and go back and track down my family. And it's a different situation than Miranda's, of course. I can do that. Dean says to me, why do you do that? Why do you go down there? Why do you drive 85 miles to see your family? I said, I love them. He said, well, they don't ever come up here. I said, I don't care, I love them. I go see them, you know, when I get an opportunity. And I think that that's important. When you love somebody, you care about them, you bridge that gap so that you can at least do what your heart says, is maybe they'll see Christ in me at some point and desire him, you know. I don't know, but that's what love's all about.
I agree with you.
Putting yourself forward.
It's not give and take. I'd like to think it was.
Give and give.
It's more give. And if you are a father or a mother, you know that already.
Yeah.
And it's not, you come see me and then I'll come see you. I mean, there are people in my life that they won't call you unless you call them, and I'm going, what in the world is that about? That is so foreign to me. I don't care whether you call me or not. I want to call you. I want to talk to you. I mean, pride does all kinds of stuff to people. You know, it's ridiculous. If I feel to call somebody, or I love my children. I had a mother say to me, my kids don't call me every week, I'm not going to call them. I said, well, you are the mother. Be a mother. I mean...
be an example.
Really? And does it hurt?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't hurt to call.
My youngest daughter, last time I called her, we've had an off and on relationship for a while. I said, see, if you wait long enough, your mother will call you. if you stay away long enough, I will call you, because yeah. I want to know what's going on.
Why does God make us father and mothers if it's not to be the glue? I mean, if I don't hear from somebody, Kara don't call or you don't call, I'll call you. I mean, I'm not thinking. She called me last, so I'm mad at her. That's ridiculous.
Well, we like to punish people.
Playing
games.
It's
part of that. It's a game. It's playing games.
Really?
Really.
It's silly. Liz, could you bring me a water, honey?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I guess we'll finish up. We don't have much left in this book, and I don't want to start the next one yet. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about what she was saying. And actually, it's just kind of the general.
That's good.
It won't hurt anything.
It started for you.
Kind of the general gist of what we've been getting at is, you know, the Gnostics. That was what they believed. They believed in the personal relationship with divinity. And they believed it was for everybody, that it wasn't an elect group like the priesthood.
Please.
Sadducees or whatever.
It is.
And that really was the crux of the big difference between what the church wanted and what Gnostics wanted. And, of course, we know that, for the most part, the Gnostics got shut up, you know, eradicated, tortured, killed, whatever, in pursuit of that. However, divinity and its mightiness saw down through the ages and thought it would be a good idea to hide away a couple copies of this stuff to be found by Shepherd, 1945, so that we could have a different understanding, so that these things that we're feeling are indeed being backed up by the literature that's being presented. And, of course, it is causing some other problems on other ends. I mean, you know, it's calling into account the validity of the Bible itself as a scripture.
Absolutely.
You know, in doing all of this stuff and talking about all these different concepts and ideas, I just hope that we as a people, not just the people in the room, but just people that are in this kind of a message, will, instead of consuming this and allowing it to be a game that we play and causing division because, well, I don't believe that the way that you believe, I think that we should try to focus on what it is that this brings to our personal spirituality.
Absolutely.
You know, so like I've said before and others have, just take what you want, what you feel led to eat. And if you don't feel led to eat it, then don't eat it. But don't get mad because somebody else does.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, or vice versa, you know. Well, she didn't eat of that, so I can't partake of her. I mean, come on, folks. This is not kindergarten.
Really?
You know, so there may be some things in here that that are for you, that, you know, that really help you out on a spiritual level, but somebody else just doesn't cotton with it for some reason. Now, maybe possibly they don't need that. So that's really was all I was wanting to say about that.
Can I just tell you one thing before mm-hmm. you start? When Stacy came, he taught us the restitution of all things, the reconciliation of creation. And we were in a little Pentecostal kingdom group. And it was like if somebody came in there trying to teach us the rapture or something. It was like, oh. You know, and there were big fights, big divisions over it. And this one guy came down and set our church in order from Champaign, Illinois. We didn't even know the guy. He came down and set Stacy down. He was our pastor at the time. He set him down. And he said, "You'll not teach that in this church." And Stacy said, "Well, brother, I resign from being the pastor of this church, so now here it is, you take it over." And that place went like, it just broke into a million pieces. And those of us that followed Stacy followed him.
Right.
You know, because we could hear a truth. We didn't understand it all. Didn't know how come there could be a second chance or that, those kind of things. You know, we didn't understand that part. We really didn't understand the depths of hell and the inward man and those kinds of things at that point. But what a journey. You know, what if we hadn't heard it? So give somebody an opportunity to bring forth things that you're not familiar with, because it's needful.
Well, I think that it's, you know, it's something that we all should kind of dig into. Like I said, I'm going to finish this book up. This was, which one was this one? Thomas, I think.
I think it was.
Yeah, Gospel of Thomas. The next one is the Gospel of John, and it's similar fashion. A lot of the stuff that is in this is in the Bible. It's just, it's worded a little bit differently or whatever. So a lot of this stuff, you're going to recognize it, be like, oh yeah, that's Matthew, whatever. I think we stopped here last.
Can I say something? I can get us each.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Of this through Amazon, of it, like each book, if you would like to have a copy of the book.
They've got these for, what was it, $10?
No, I don't remember how much that was.
Yeah. This is what I was talking about, because this is what we looked up. We started to look up the individual books and realized they're going to be too damn expensive for that. So we looked up these. They have them used, still in good shape.
Oh, yeah. For $10.
Around 10, which is not bad.
Yeah, so if you're interested in your own copy, let me know, because I can get them through Amazon. And they're not that expensive, and it's kind of nice to have something.
It's free shipping, so I think, don't you?
I get free shipping.
So. Anyway, I think we stopped at 106. Yeshua said, "When you make two into one, you will become human children. When you say, 'Mountain, move,' the mountain will move." Yeshua said, "The kingdom is like a shepherd who had 100 sheep. One of them, the largest, went astray. He left the 99 and looked for the one until he found it. After so much trouble, he said to the sheep, 'I love you more than the 99. Yeshua said, "Whosoever drinks from my mouth will become like me. I myself shall become that person. And the hidden things that things will be revealed to that one." Yeshua said, "The kingdom is like a person who has a treasure hid in his field. He did not know it, and when he died, he left it to his son. The son did not know about it. He took over the field and sold it. The buyer was plowing and found the treasure, and began to lend money at interest to whomever he wished." Yeshua said, "You who have found the world and become wealthy, renounce the world. The heaven and earth will roll up in your presence, and you will live from the living one. And you who live from the living one will not see death." Doesn't Yeshua say this? "Whosoever has found oneself, of that person the world is not worthy." Yeshua said, "Shame on the flesh that depends on the soul. Shame on the soul that depends on the flesh." His students said to him, "When will the kingdom come?" Yeshua said, It will not come because you are watching for it. No one will announce, "Look, here it is," or, "Look, there it is." The Father's kingdom is spread out upon the earth, and people do not see it. Shimon Kepha, just Simon Peter, said to them, "Miriam should leave us, females are not worthy of life. Yeshua said, look, I shall guide her to make her male, so she too may become a living spirit resembling you males. For every female who makes herself male will enter the kingdom of heaven. And that's the end of the Gospel of Thomas. Of course, I think that what he was saying there was just a spiritual thing, but
it's beautiful, because then, to me, what you just read, you do have to give everything this thought. And we're usually not really thoughtful people. We want things to hurry up and get through us, you know. So it's important, I think, to give thought. And that's why the way they put the scripture, the Gnostics anyway, makes you have to think about it. Speaking of the woman, is she able to give seed? Well, not really. But when she understands who she is able to give seed, because that makes her male. She's both male and female. So it's so important to be ready to be used to plant seed at the right time. You can know when that is in a conversation, usually. You can tell when someone is hungry for more or wants to grow. It's just evident, you know. It's not an intellectual game. It's a hunger game, so to speak. And I can usually just feel when people are hungry, not when they say they're hungry. People will tell you they're hungry all the time, but sometimes I'm wondering, what are they hungry for? Because it's not what I'm feeding. And so how do you feel about that, those things? I mean, I like to discuss the end of that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about it a little more, because then that makes it substance for us to grow. Nobody wants to.
Well, I can.
Yeah, I kind of want to. But I'm just thinking about what I would say.
Read it again if you want me to.
I think the thing of knowing that I'm going to just use Christ, the male part, so that we can understand it a little bit better, maybe, or I can understand it a little bit better. I understand that growing up into Him, we become like Him. And that's what I got from that, was that I'm growing up into Him, and whatever He is, that's what I'm growing up to be. So if He can plant seed, then I can plant seed. I can touch lives if He can touch lives. I need His direction to do that, not just, and sometimes I need what I call intuition, which is not intuition. It's the spirit that guides to that, you know, it's that inward man that's redeemed. And I think that so many times we can't think of it in those terms. So we've had a lot of teaching on the soul and the masculine, the feminine, the parts of the soul, the ones to be careful about and the ones to embrace, you know. So I think all that's tied up in that little chapter.
Well, and then he's, you know, this kind of blows out of the water a lot of typical Christian theology. But he says, the students ask him, when will the kingdom come? And he says, it will not come because you're watching for it. No one will announce, look, here it is, or look, there it is.
Or
the Father's kingdom is spread upon the earth. Yeah. The Father's kingdom is spread upon the earth, and people do not see it. So he was clearly referencing that the kingdom of God had nothing to do with a time or a place.
Please.
Right.
Right, which is completely contradictory to everything that Christianity teaches, right?
Because of their humanity, their unwillingness to look at things, and I don't know if it's unwillingness or if it's just
not,
because
they don't want to be open-minded.
I think it is somewhat unwillingness, but you know, you can talk to people and they'll just agree all over you, and then all of a sudden they don't know what you were talking about.
Yeah.
It's like, hello.
Yeah.
Open their eyes.
Really.
You know.
That's the agnostics. They don't know. You know, they're without the knowledge. And I think people that don't have an understanding but really want to know, God gives them an intuition or a discernment of where to go to get a place to see planted. You know, it happens all the time.
I've known some people that were agnostic, and most of the time they just don't want to know.
Just
so,
take my pea shooter.
Well, that's close to the atheist side.
Yeah.
Agnostic means without knowledge.
Yeah, it means
it's not
to know.
That they don't believe or disbelieve. They want
it's the
some truth.
It's the opposite of a Gnostic.
It's the truth. They want to know what the truth is or what a fact is. Give me some background. I'm curious of what this might be about. And a lot of people get the background, and may not be what they're looking for, and they get discouraged or go somewhere else. But anybody that's has enough desire inside to try to learn something, that, you know, I think God puts it out there for them to be found just in conversation. You know, I run into people all the time that I'm working around, or customers that are curious. You know, religion to me is just, it's segregation is all it is. You don't believe one of these ways or these ways, well, you're wrong. It's, everybody has their own way of learning to understand God as they understand it, you know. Everybody has a different relationship or a different way of trying to understand what God's about, you know. And there's one God, but different, seven different religions have a different name for the supreme being. But all the stories are the same, and it goes back to the mighty one, and that's it, you know. I don't know why people try to push, you know, if you don't believe what I believe, you're in trouble, you know.
It's because it's ego.
It's, you know,
yeah.
They'll catch you when they catch you.
They want
but
to
I
control.
God gives everybody the discernment. Even a kid with a mental, you know, mental retarded kids, you know, they still, people think they don't know right from wrong, and they don't know nothing. I've worked around them. They got a clue on something, you know. So if they have a clue, people without that setback can definitely understand if they want to. I think it's all about desire. What do you want to know or not?
Oh,
it's not that they don't know how to understand. If they won't understand something bad enough, they'll find, you know, if there's a will, there is a way to get whatever you want.
It's like they say, there are no agnostics in foxholes. You know, you find religion real quick. But anyway, yeah, I think that this has been, thus far, it's been, at least for me, it's been enlightening, and I'm learning some. Mom got me a couple books here that I'm going to attempt to read this week. I don't know if I'll be able to do it or not, but I'm going to try to at least read one of them. And I'll give you guys a synopsis on it Sunday. And if anybody, once I've read these, if anybody else wants to read them, just say something. But anyway, I thought it would be good to have a little bit of background knowledge, a little bit of history about these folks. I mean, I've watched stuff on TV and read things here and there, but figured it would be a good idea to beef up on that. So I'll read those. And like I said, we'll start with the Gospel of John next time. I thought this was interesting, though. It's 107. He says, "The kingdom is like a shepherd who had 100 sheep. One of them, the largest, went astray. He left the 99 and looked for the one till he found it. After so much trouble, he said to the sheep, 'I love you more than the 99. I mean, that, it kind of reminds me of the prodigal son story. And, you know, that's just kind of our human nature. You know, we're fine having the 99. It's the one that we lose that we want back. You know. And, of course, so many of these things are just so, they're just echoing or,
so
I guess.
So today we call Dr. Phil.
Huh?
So today we call Dr. Phil to get ours back.
Get our what back?
our ones that we lose.
Oh, Dr. Phil. He's all right.
He's different.
You know, he says here, "Whosoever drinks from my mouth will become like me. I myself shall become that person." And the hidden things will be revealed to that one. It sounds very similar to some of the scriptures, but this is a lot more personal. You know, I think that one of the benefits of this is that it's only translated once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have tons of translations.
All the other New Testament, like the entire New Testament, is already been translated like twice before anybody got their hands on it, because the only copies in Aramaic or Hebrew at the time were destroyed or lost. So, and you know, if you know anything about translating things are sometimes lost in translation, or simply because of a social or cultural difference, you can't convey the same concept because people don't live that way. So I think that this is good. I would like to see, I mean, this has got books that do not exist in the New Testament, but I would like to see a translation of any of the New Testament books that they have in there instead of what we currently have, because that's directly, it's Aramaic. So it's a direct translation. You don't have to jump through all the hoops.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would like to see that. I'm surprised somebody hasn't done it yet.
I have an Aramaic Bible up here.
Yeah.
That I bought years and years ago. So. Directly from the Aramaic. And
is the wording different? Like kind of like this? It's a little
back.
Bit more direct. You know, it's not, you don't have all the flowery.
It's not as direct as that, no. Probably somebody wanted to make money that way, but
I used to try to go through the King James and leave out the words in italics and just read it without the italics. I've done that a lot.
Well, we have the New Testament in what, 23 translations. Aramaic is included in there, yeah. Each verse.
Yeah.
Well, 26 translations.
26, okay.
Yeah.
Aramaic is included.
I used to have a 26 translation. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I've got one of the old ones.
You said in 1945 they found it again. Where did they find it?
Egypt.
In Egypt.
Buried.
Buried.
Wasn't it about this when they found all the Dead Sea Scrolls and all that?
About
the same time.
It was around the same time. Yeah, I think the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in 1947, but.
Why is Megiddo coming to my mind? Is that someplace?
It's a city. It's where we get the word Armageddon from.
Okay, so they may have found some of them there. That's coming in my head for some reason.
Yeah, the Dead Sea Scrolls, I think, were found in caves, and the Nag Hammadi Scrolls were found in basically somebody just dug a pit and put them in there.
Yeah, Qumran in the caves. And the Essenes had been populated. Right in those caves.
Yeah, they lived. They think it was the Essenes because they lived there. That's where they lived.
Which Mary is supposed to have been Jesus' mother.
Traditionally, she was an Essene. As was John the Baptist.
Yeah, I would think he was a little out of the mold. He said it was out of the boat.
Well, that whole thing, I mean, the Essenes, that really sparked the Roman, what do you want to call it, meddling. I mean, as they became more militant, the Romans sent more troops, you know, until it exploded in like 70 AD. That's where they get the word Mossad is from. There was a bunch of Essenes, I believe, that were up on this mesa. It was like basically a natural fort that they built. The Romans laid siege to it. It took them forever, but they finally got to them. There was like nobody alive. Everybody committed suicide before the Romans could get to them.
Strange.
Well, it's pretty extreme for a Hebrew to commit suicide. But that's where the word Mossad comes from. And that's their, you know, covert operations, military stuff. And that was kind of the end of an era for the Jews, because when that happened, of course, the Roman involvement became quite a bit more for a while. And according to them, the Messiah hadn't come, so a lot of them felt like God had abandoned them. A lot of them were, at that time, well, most of them were Jews or Benjamites, but the rest of the ten tribes, and right at that time, were released from Persia and went up over the mountains there. Caucasus Mountains, where we get the word Caucasian from, and filtered down into Northern Europe and Eastern Europe. It's kind of ironic, because the Romans on one side are dealing directly with the Hebrew, with the Jews and the Benjamites, but then 70 years later, the 4 or 5 million Hebrews of the other lost 10 tribes start filtering in, filling in any existing villages and such like that, creating their own sometimes, and creating a threat from the north that had previously not been there. I mean, 5 million people is a lot of folks. So, and in the end, ultimately, it did cause the downfall of Rome, the Gauls and the Celts, because Rome couldn't deal with them. So, anyway, a little history lesson. But they say, and this is what I understand that they teach over in Europe, is that most of, if your family came from anywhere in Europe, you have the blood of one of the ten tribes in you at least.
I followed a little British Israel there for a few years. Listened to it anyway. Mm-hmm. I didn't really follow it. I didn't understand it that much. So I knew that it wasn't a natural.
British Israel.
I knew it wasn't like a natural inheritance. It was a spiritual.
What was his name? Britain?
Oh, no. Bill Britton was
it? No, not him. It was another fellow.
Yeah, I know. You're talking Gene.
I can't either.
He's out there in California, and he was on a late night, which was the only time I could really watch TV because I had three kids running around.
Yeah.
I don't know who you're trying to think of.
Well, William Bennett was the one that wrote the book. He wrote a book on that and giving pretty good evidence, in my opinion. I mean.
Yeah, if you could follow a natural line for an inheritance, but we know that even Israel has a natural line.
But it is interesting that it's something that's kind of been not talked about in America.
The lining up of the sun at certain times of year in the big pyramid and all this stuff. I don't know what all that had to do with anything. I mean, it was interesting, but, right. You know, I went from Edgar Case to that guy. I finally got saved. One day down the road. So, now I don't know if I'm saved or not. I think I'm in process.
Well, I think we're in process.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's pretty much all I got.
Well, the point you brought up about the shepherd, I thought was good, because he says, I'm the good shepherd, and mm-hmm. my sheep know my voice. So to drink from his mouth wouldn't be a strange thing, mm-hmm. you know, for whatever he pours into us through the word and through the spirit, all that is, you know, necessary mm-hmm. if we want to be redeemed in the sense that we understand. Drink from his cup and eat from his plate.
Well, I think we know when we are right on and when we're not. I think we have an idea. The truth. You shall have a relationship with the truth, and the truth will set you free. And I don't think it comes quickly or slowly or easily. I think it comes slowly. That's how I think it comes. Because I still have questions that I have before the Lord that haven't been answered clearly anyway for me. But I believe he is after a hungry heart. And I don't think it was by fat chance that while these Gnostics were so popular that the Nicene Council stuck its head up.
That was Constantine's doing, actually. I mean,
yeah.
You know, he was trying, I guess he wanted some order instead of the chaos, so, you know, he felt like he had to do something.
I just kind of want to know a little more about him. I think he was probably a devil in disguise.
He was a control freak.
Oh, well, yeah, he's certainly a control freak. Yeah. I mean, you have to remember that back then, blood was everything, and I mean, the emperor, he wasn't just a king, he was divine.
He was God, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's a pretty constant theme, although we don't think of it that way, but it is a constant theme throughout, you know, that time period and throughout the Middle Ages and Dark Ages.
In Catholicism, the Pope is divine.
Well, and if you have royal blood, not noble, but if you have royal blood, then you are an elite group. You are those who have been chosen, so to speak. And as we know, I mean, that we, even till today, I mean, the most lucrative businesses in the world is the British royal family. I mean, so, yeah.
Of whom I am a direct descendant of the Drakes. I don't know if it's the same Drakes or not.
Right.
Probably not.
Well, apparently they recorded all this.
Oh, yeah.